This is Audible.
Tantor Audio presents The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing by Marie Kondo, narrated by Emily Wu Zeller. Introduction. In this book, I have summed up how to put your space in order in a way that will change your life forever. Impossible? A common response, and not surprising, considering that almost everyone has experienced a rebound effect at least once, if not multiple times, after tidying. Have you ever tidied madly, only to find that all too soon your home or workspace is cluttered again? If so, let me share with you the secret of success. Start by discarding. Then organize your space, thoroughly, completely, in one go. If you adopt this approach, the KonMari method, you'll never revert to clutter again. Although this approach contradicts conventional wisdom, everyone who completes my private course has successfully kept their house in order, with unexpected results. Putting their house in order positively affects all other aspects of their lives, including work and family. Having devoted more than 80% of my life to this subject, I know that tidying can transform your life. Does it still sound too good to be true? If your idea of tidying is getting rid of one unnecessary item a day or cleaning up your room a little at a time, then you are right. It won't have much effect on your life. If you change your approach, however, tidying can have an immeasurable impact. In fact, that is what it means to put your house in order. I started reading home and lifestyle magazines when I was 5, and it was this that inspired me, from the age of 15, to undertake a serious study of tidying that led to my development of the KonMari method, based on a combination of my first and last names. I am now a consultant and spend most of my days visiting homes and offices, giving hands-on advice to people who find it difficult to tidy, who tidy but suffer rebounds, or who want to tidy but don't know where to start. The number of things my clients have discarded, from clothes and undergarments to photos, pens, magazine clippings, and makeup samples, easily exceeds 1 million items. This is no exaggeration. I have assisted individual clients who have thrown out 245-liter garbage bags in one go. For my exploration of the art of organizing and my experience helping messy people become tidy, there is one thing I can say with confidence. A dramatic reorganization of the home causes correspondingly dramatic changes in lifestyle and perspective. It is life-transforming. I mean it. Here are just a few of the testimonies I receive on a daily basis from former clients. After your course, I quit my job and launched my own business doing something I had dreamed of doing ever since I was a child. Your course taught me to see what I really need and what I don't. So I got a divorce. Now I feel much happier. Someone I have been wanting to get in touch with recently contacted me. I'm delighted to report that since cleaning up my apartment, I've been able to really increase my sales. My husband and I are getting along much better.
I'm amazed to find that just throwing things away has changed me so much.
I finally succeeded in losing 10 pounds. My clients always sound so happy, and the results show that tidying has changed their way of thinking and their approach to life. In fact, it has changed their future. Why? This question is addressed in more detail throughout the book, but basically, when you put your house in order, you put your affairs and your past in order too. As a result, you can see quite clearly what you need in life and what you don't, and what you should and shouldn't do. I currently offer a course for clients in their homes and for company owners in their offices. These are all private, one-on-one consultations, but I have yet to run out of clients. There is currently a 3-month waiting list, and I receive inquiries daily from people who have been introduced by a former client or who have heard about the course from someone else. I travel from one end of Japan to the other, and sometimes even overseas. Tickets for one of my public talks for stay-at-home parents sold out overnight. There was a waiting list not only for cancellations, but also for the waiting list. Yet my repeater rate is 0.
From a business perspective, this would appear to be a fatal flaw. But what if my lack of repeaters was actually the secret to the popularity of my approach? As I said at the beginning, people who use the KonMari method never revert to clutter again. Because they can keep their space in order, they don't need to come back for more lessons. I occasionally check in with graduates of my courses to see how they are doing. In almost every case, not only is their home or office still in order, but they are continuing to improve their space. It is evident from the photographs they send that they have even fewer belongings than when they finished the course, and have acquired new curtains and furnishings. They are surrounded only by the things they love. Why does my course transform people? Because my approach is not simply a technique. The act of tidying is a series of simple actions in which objects are moved from one place to another. It involves putting things away where they belong. This seems so simple that even a 6-year-old should be able to do it. Yet most people can't. A short time after tidying, their space is a disorganized mess. The cause is not lack of skills, but rather lack of awareness, and the inability to make tidying a regular habit. In other words, the root of the problem lies in the mind. Success is 90% dependent on our mindset. Excluding the fortunate few to whom organizing comes naturally, if we do not address this aspect, rebound is inevitable, no matter how much is discarded or how cleverly things are organized. So how can you acquire the right kind of mindset? There is just one way, and, paradoxically, it is by acquiring the right technique. Remember, the KonMari method I describe in this book is not a mere set of rules on how to sort, organize, and put things away. It is a guide to acquiring the right mindset for creating order and becoming a tidy person. Of course, I can't claim that all my students have perfected the art of tidying. Unfortunately, some had to stop for one reason or another before completing the course. And some quit because they expected me to do the work for them. As an organizing fanatic and professional, I can tell you right now that no matter how hard I try to organize another space, no matter how perfect a storage system I devise, I can never put someone else's house in order in the true sense of the term. Why? Because a person's awareness and perspective on his or her own lifestyle are far more important than any skill at sorting, storing, or whatever. Order is dependent on the extremely personal values of what a person wants to live with. Most people would prefer to live in a clean and tidy space. Anyone who has managed to tidy even once will have wished to keep it that way. But many don't believe it's possible. They try out various approaches to tidying, only to find that things soon return to normal. I am absolutely convinced, however, that everyone can keep his or her space in order. To do that, it is essential to thoroughly reassess your habits and assumptions about tidying. That may sound like far too much work, but don't worry. By the time you finish listening to this book, you will be ready and willing. People often tell me, "I'm disorganized by nature. I can't do it." Or, "I don't have time." But being messy is not hereditary, nor is it related to lack of time. It has far more to do with the accumulation of mistaken notions about tidying, such as, "It's best to tackle one room at a time," or, "It's better to do a little each day," or, "Storage should follow the flow plan of the house." In Japan, people believe that things like cleaning your room and keeping your bathroom spick and span bring good luck. But if your house is cluttered, the effect of polishing the toilet bowl is going to be limited. The same is true for the practice of feng shui. It is only when you put your house in order that your furniture and decorations come to life. When you've finished putting your house in order, your life will change dramatically. Once you have experienced what it's like to have a truly ordered house, you'll feel your whole world brighten. Never again will you revert to clutter. This is what I call the magic of tidying. And the effects are stupendous. Not only will you never be messy again, but you'll also get a new start on life. This is the magic I want to share with as many people as possible. 1. Why can't I keep my house in order? You can't tidy if you've never learned how. When I tell people that my profession is teaching others how to tidy, I am usually met with looks of astonishment. "Can you actually make money doing that?" is their first question. This is almost always followed by, "Do people need lessons in tidying?" It's true that while instructors and schools offer courses in everything from cooking and how to wear a kimono to yoga and Zen meditation, you'll be hard-pressed to find classes on how to tidy. The general assumption, in Japan at least, is that tidying doesn't need to be taught, but rather is picked up naturally. Cooking skills and recipes are passed down as family traditions from grandmother to mother to daughter. Yet one never hears of anyone passing on the family secrets of tidying, even within the same household. Think back to your own childhood. I'm sure most of us have been scolded for not tidying up our rooms, but how many of our parents consciously taught us how to tidy as part of our upbringing? Our parents demanded that we clean up our rooms, but they too had never been trained in how to do that. When it comes to tidying, we are all self-taught. Instruction in tidying is neglected not only in the home but also at school. When we think back to our home economics classes, most of us remember making hamburgers or learning how to use a sewing machine to make an apron. But compared to cooking and sewing, surprisingly little time is devoted to the subject of tidying. Even if it is included in a textbook, that section is either just read in class, or worse, assigned for reading at home so that students can skip ahead to more popular topics, such as food and health. Consequently, even the extremely rare home economics graduates who have formally studied tidying can't do it. Food, clothing, and shelter are the most basic human needs. So you would think that where we live would be considered just as important as what we eat and what we wear. Yet in most societies, tidying, the job that keeps a home livable, is completely disregarded because of the misconception that the ability to tidy is acquired through experience and therefore doesn't require training. Do people who have been tidying for more years than others tidy better? The answer is no. 25% of my students are women in their 50s, and the majority of them have been homemakers for close to 30 years, which makes them veterans at this job. But do they tidy better than women in their 20s? The opposite is true. Many of them have spent so many years applying erroneous conventional approaches that their homes overflow with unnecessary items, and they struggle to keep clutter under control with ineffective storage methods. How can they be expected to know how to tidy when they have never studied it properly? If you too don't know how to tidy, don't be discouraged. Now is the time to learn. By studying and applying the KonMari method presented in this book, you can escape the vicious cycle of clutter. A tidying marathon doesn't cause rebound. I clean up when I realize how untidy my place is, but once I'm done, it's not long before it's a mess again. This is a common complaint, and the standard response touted by magazine advice columns is, "Don't try tidying your entire house all at once. You'll just rebound. Make a habit of doing a little at a time." I first stumbled across this refrain when I was 5. As the middle child of 3 children, I was raised with a great deal of freedom. My mother was busy taking care of my newborn younger sister, and my brother, who was 2 years older than me, was always glued to the TV playing video games. Consequently, I spent most of my time at home on my own. My favorite pastime was reading home and lifestyle magazines. My mother subscribed to Esse, a magazine with features on interior decorating, cleaning tips, and product reviews. As soon as it was delivered, I would snatch it from the mailbox before my mother even knew it had arrived, rip open the envelope, and immerse myself in the contents. On my way home from school, I liked to stop at the bookstore and browse through Orange Page, a popular Japanese food magazine. I wasn't actually able to read all the words, but these magazines, with their photos of scrumptious dishes, amazing tips for removing stains and grease, and penny-saving ideas, were as fascinating for me as game guides were for my brother. I would fold the corner of a page that caught my interest and dream of trying out the tip described. I also made up a variety of my own solitary games. For example, after reading a feature on saving money, I immediately launched into a power-saving game that involved roaming about the house and unplugging things that weren't in use, even though I knew nothing about electric meters. In response to another feature, I filled plastic bottles with water and put them in the toilet tank in a solo water-saving contest. Articles on storage inspired me to convert milk cartons into dividers for my drawers and make a letter rack by stacking empty video cases between two pieces of furniture. At school, while other kids were playing dodgeball or skipping, I'd slip away to rearrange the bookshelves in our classroom or check the contents of the mop cupboard, all the while muttering about the poor storage methods. If only there were an S-hook, it would be so much easier to use. But there was one problem that seemed unsolvable. No matter how much I tidied, it wasn't long before every space was a mess again. The milk carton dividers in my desk drawer soon overflowed with pens. The rack made from video cases was soon so crammed with letters and papers that it crumpled to the floor. With cooking or sewing, practice makes perfect. But even though tidying is also housework, I never seemed to improve, no matter how often I did it. Nowhere stayed tidy for long. It can't be helped, I consoled myself. Rebound comes with the territory. If I tackle the job all at once, I'll just get discouraged. I had read this in many articles about tidying and assumed it was true. If I had a time machine now, I'd go back and tell myself, "That's wrong. If you use the right approach, you'll never rebound." Most people associate the word rebound with dieting, but when they hear it used in the context of tidying, it still makes sense. It seems logical that a sudden, drastic reduction in clutter could have the same effect as a drastic cut in calories. But don't be deceived. The moment you begin moving furniture around and getting rid of garbage, your room changes. It's very simple. If you put your house in order in one fell swoop, you will have tidied up in one fell swoop. In Japanese, the term is ikini, or in one go. Rebound occurs because people mistakenly believe they have tidied thoroughly, when in fact, they have only sorted and stored things halfway. If you put your house in order properly, you'll be able to keep your room tidy, even if you are lazy or sloppy by nature. Tidy a little a day and you'll be tidying forever. If you tidy your house all at once, you'll rebound. It's better to make it a habit to do a little at a time. Although this advice sounds very tempting, we've already seen that the first part is wrong. How about the suggestion that we should do only a little a day? Although it sounds convincing, don't be fooled. The reason you never seem to finish is precisely because you tidy a little at a time. Changing lifestyle habits acquired over a span of many years is generally extremely difficult. If you have never succeeded in staying tidy to date, you will find it next to impossible to develop the habit of tidying a little at a time. People cannot change their habits without first changing their way of thinking. And that's not easy. After all, it's quite hard to control what we think. There is, however, one way to drastically transform the way we think about tidying. The subject of tidying first caught my attention when I was in junior high school. The catalyst was a book called The Art of Discarding by Nagisa Tatsumi, Takarajimasha Incorporated, which explained the importance of getting rid of unnecessary things. I picked the book up on my way home from school, intrigued to see a topic I had never encountered before, and I can still remember the shock of surprise I felt as I read it on the train. I became so absorbed that I almost missed my stop. Once home, I went straight to my room with a handful of garbage bags and stayed closeted for several hours. Although my room was small, by the time I finished, I had 8 bags full of stuff. Clothes I never wore, textbooks from elementary school, toys I had not played with in years, my eraser and seal collection. I had forgotten that most of these things even existed. I sat motionless on the floor for about an hour afterward, staring at the pile of bags and wondering, why on earth did I bother keeping all this stuff? What shocked me most, however, was how different my room looked. After only a few hours, I could see parts of the floor that had never been revealed before. My room seemed to have been transformed, and the air inside seemed so much fresher and brighter that even my mind felt clearer. Tidying, I realized, could have far more impact than I had ever imagined. Thunderstruck by the extent of the change, from that day on I turned my attention from cooking and sewing, which I had thought were the essentials of a well-kept home, to the art of tidying. Tidying brings visible results. Tidying never lies. The ultimate secret of success is this. If you tidy up in one shot, rather than little by little, you can dramatically change your mindset. A change so profound that it touches your emotions will irresistibly affect your way of thinking and your lifestyle habits. My clients do not develop the habit of tidying gradually. Every one of them has been clutter-free since they undertook their tidying marathon. This approach is the key to preventing rebound. When people revert to clutter, no matter how much they tidy, it is not their room or their belongings, but their way of thinking that is at fault. Even if they are initially inspired, they can't stay motivated and their efforts peter out. The root cause lies in the fact that they can't see the results or feel the effects. This is precisely why success depends on experiencing tangible results immediately. If you use the right method and concentrate your efforts on eliminating clutter thoroughly and completely within a short span of time, you'll see instant results that will empower you to keep your space in order ever after. Anyone who experiences this process, no matter who they are, will vow never to revert to clutter again. Why you should aim for perfection. Don't aim for perfection. Start off slowly and discard just one item a day. What lovely words to ease the hearts of those who lack confidence in their ability to tidy. I came across this advice when I was devouring every book about tidying that had ever been published in Japan, and I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. The momentum sparked by my epiphany concerning the power of tidying was beginning to wear off, and I was starting to feel jaded by the lack of solid results. These words seemed to make sense. It seems daunting to aim for perfection from the beginning. Besides, perfection is supposedly unattainable. By discarding one thing a day, I could get rid of 365 things by the end of the year. Convinced that I had discovered a very practical method, I immediately followed the book's instructions. I opened my closet in the morning wondering what to dispose of that day. Seeing a t-shirt that I no longer wore, I put it in the garbage bag. Before going to bed the next night, I opened my desk drawer and discovered a notebook that seemed too childish for me. I put it in the bag. Noticing a memo pad in the same drawer, I thought to myself, "Oh, I don't need that anymore." But as I reached out to pick it up, I paused at a new thought. "I can save that to discard tomorrow." And I waited until the next morning to throw it away. The day after that, I forgot completely, so I got rid of two items on the following day. To be honest, I did not last 2 weeks. I am not the type of person who likes to plug away at something, one step at a time. For people like me, who do their assignments on the very last day right before the deadline, this approach just doesn't work. Besides, casting off one object a day did not compensate for the fact that when I shop, I buy several items at one time. In the end, the pace at which I reduced could not keep up with the pace at which I acquired new things, and I was confronted with the discouraging fact that my space was still cluttered. It wasn't long before I had completely forgotten to follow the rule of discarding one item per day. So I can tell you from experience that you will never get your house in order if you only clean up half-heartedly. If, like me, you are not the diligent, persevering type, then I recommend aiming for perfection just once. Many people may protest when I use the word perfection, insisting that it's an impossible goal. But don't worry. Tidying, in the end, is just a physical act. The work involved can be broadly divided into two kinds: deciding whether or not to dispose of something, and deciding where to put it. If you can do these two things, you can achieve perfection. Objects can be counted. All you need to do is look at each item, one at a time, and decide whether or not to keep it and where to put it. That's all you need to complete this job. It is not hard to tidy up perfectly and completely in one fell swoop. In fact, anyone can do it. And if you want to avoid rebound, this is the only way to do it.
The moment you start, you reset your life. Have you ever found yourself unable to study the night before an exam and begun frantically tidying? I confess, I have. In fact, for me it was a regular event. I would take the piles of handouts covering my desk and throw them in the garbage. Then, unable to stop, I'd tackle the textbooks and papers littering the floor and begin arranging them in my bookcase. Finally, I'd open my desk drawer and start organizing my pens and pencils. Before I knew it, it would be 2:30 in the morning. Overcome by sleep, I'd jolt awake again at 5, and only then, in a complete panic, would I open my textbook and buckle down to study. I thought that this urge to tidy before an exam was a peculiar quirk of my own, but after meeting many others who do the same, I realized that it was a common phenomenon. Many people get the urge to clean up when under pressure, such as just before an exam. But this urge doesn't occur because they want to clean their room. It occurs because they need to put something else in order. Their brain is actually clamoring to study, but when it notices the cluttered space, the focus switches to, I need to clean up my room. The fact that the tidying urge rarely continues once the crisis is over proves my theory. Once the exam has ended, the passion poured into cleaning the previous night dissipates, and life returns to normal. All thought of tidying is wiped from the person's mind. Why? Because the problem faced, that is, the need to study for the exam, has been tidied away. This doesn't mean that tidying your room will actually calm your troubled mind. While it may help you feel refreshed temporarily, the relief won't last because you haven't addressed the true cause of your anxiety. If you let the temporary relief achieved by tidying up your physical space deceive you, you will never recognize the need to clean up your psychological space. This was true for me. Distracted by the need to tidy my room, it took me so long to get down to studying that my grades were always terrible. Let's imagine a cluttered room. It does not get messy all by itself. You, the person who lives in it, makes the mess. There is a saying that a messy room equals a messy mind. I look at it this way. When a room becomes cluttered, the cause is more than just physical. Visible mess helps distract us from the true source of the disorder. The act of cluttering is really an instinctive reflex that draws our attention away from the heart of an issue. If you can't feel relaxed in a clean and tidy room, try confronting your feeling of anxiety. It may shed light on what is really bothering you. When your room is clean and uncluttered, you have no choice but to examine your inner state. You can see any issues you have been avoiding and are forced to deal with them. From the moment you start tidying, you will be compelled to reset your life. As a result, your life will start to change. That's why the task of putting your house in order should be done quickly. It allows you to confront the issues that are really important. Tidying is just a tool, not the final destination. The true goal should be to establish the lifestyle you want most once your house has been put in order. Storage experts are hoarders. What is the first problem that comes to mind when you think of tidying? For many, the answer is storage. My clients often want me to teach them what to put where. Believe me, I can relate. But unfortunately, this is not the real issue. A booby trap lies within the term storage. Features on how to organize and store your belongings and convenient storage products are always accompanied by stock phrases that make it sound simple, such as, organize your space in no time, or make tidying fast and easy. It's human nature to take the easy route, and most people leap at storage methods that promise quick and convenient ways to remove visible clutter. I confess that I, too, was once captivated by the storage myth. An avid fan of home and lifestyle magazines since kindergarten, I would read a feature on how to put things away and have to try out each suggestion immediately. I made drawers out of tissue boxes and broke my piggy bank to purchase nifty storage items. In junior high, on my way home from school, I would drop in at a DIY store or browse at a magazine stand to check out the latest products. In high school, I even called up the manufacturer of particularly intriguing items and pestered the receptionist to tell me the story of how they were invented.
I dutifully used these storage items to organize my things. Then I would stand and admire my handiwork, content with how convenient the world had become. From this experience, I can honestly declare that storage methods do not solve the problem of how to get rid of clutter. In the end, they are only a superficial answer. When I finally came to my senses, I saw that my room still wasn't tidy, even though it was full of magazine racks, bookshelves, drawer dividers, and other storage units of every kind. Why does my room still feel cluttered when I've worked so hard to organize and store things away? I wondered. Filled with despair, I looked at the contents of each storage unit and had a flash of revelation. I didn't need most of the things that were in them. Although I thought that I had been tidying, in fact I had merely been wasting my time shoving stuff out of sight, concealing the things I didn't need under a lid. Putting things away creates the illusion that the clutter problem has been solved. But sooner or later, all the storage units are full. The room once again overflows with things, and some new and easy storage method becomes necessary, creating a negative spiral. This is why tidying must start with discarding. We need to exercise self-control and resist storing our belongings until we have finished identifying what we really want and need to keep. Sort by category, not by location. My study of tidying began in earnest when I was in junior high and basically consisted of repeated practice. Every day I cleaned one place at a time, my own room, my brother's room, my sister's room, the bathroom. Each day I planned where to tidy and launched solo campaigns that resembled bargain sales. The 5th of every month is living room day. Today is clean the pantry day. Tomorrow I conquer the bathroom cupboards. I maintained this custom even after entering high school. When I came home, I headed straight for the place I had decided to clean that day without even changing out of my school uniform. If my target was a set of plastic drawers in the washroom cupboard, I would open the doors and dump everything out of one of the drawers, including makeup samples, soaps, toothbrushes, and razors. Then I would sort them by category, organize them into box dividers, and return them to the drawer. Finally, I would gaze in quiet admiration at the neatly organized contents before going on to the next drawer. I would sit on the floor for hours sorting things in the cupboard until my mother called me for supper. One day, I was sorting the contents of a drawer in the hall cupboard when I stopped in surprise. This must be the same drawer that I cleaned yesterday, I thought. It wasn't, but the items inside were the same. Makeup samples, soaps, toothbrushes, and razors. I was sorting them by category, putting them in boxes, and returning them to the drawer just like I had the day before. It was at this moment that it hit me. Tidying up by location is a fatal mistake. I'm ashamed to admit that it took me 3 years to see this. Many people are surprised to hear that such a seemingly viable approach is actually a common pitfall. The root of the problem lies in the fact that people often store the same type of item in more than one place. When we tidy each place separately, we fail to see that we're repeating the same work in many locations and become locked into a vicious circle of tidying. To avoid this, I recommend tidying by category. For example, instead of deciding that today you'll tidy a particular room, set goals like clothes today, books tomorrow. One reason so many of us never succeed at tidying is because we have too much stuff. This excess is caused by our ignorance of how much we actually own. When we disperse storage of a particular item throughout the house and tidy one place at a time, we can never grasp the overall volume and therefore can never finish. To escape this negative spiral, tidy by category, not by place. Don't change the method to suit your personality. Handbooks for tidying often claim that the cause of clutter differs depending on the person, and that therefore we should select the method that best suits our personality type. At first glance, this argument seems convincing. So that's why I can't seem to keep my space tidy, we might think. The method I've been using doesn't suit my character. We can check the handy chart on what method works for lazy people, busy people, picky people or non-picky people, and choose the one that fits. At one point, I explored this idea of categorizing methods of tidying by character type. I read books on psychology, interviewed my clients about their blood types, their parents' characters, and so on, and even tried a popular type of astrology called Dobutsu Uranai, or zoological fortune-telling. I spent over 5 years analyzing my findings in my search for a general principle governing the best method for each personality type. Instead, I discovered that there is no point whatsoever in changing your approach to suit your personality. When it comes to tidying, the majority of people are lazy. They are also busy. As for being picky, everyone is particular about certain things but not about others. When I examined the personality categories suggested, I realized that I fit all of them. So by what standard was I to categorize people's reasons for being untidy? I have a habit of trying to categorize everything, probably because I have spent so much time pondering how to organize. When I first started out as a consultant, I worked very hard to categorize my clients and tailor the content of my services to suit each type. In retrospect, however, I can see that I had an ulterior motive. Somehow I imagined that a complex approach consisting of different methods for different character types would make me look more professional. After careful consideration, however, I came to the conclusion that it makes far more sense to categorize people by their actions rather than by some generalized personality trait. Using this approach, people who can't stay tidy can be categorized into just three types: the can't-throw-it-away type, the can't-put-it-back type, and the first two combined type. Looking at my clients, I further realized that 90% fall into the third category, the can't-throw-it-away, can't-put-it-back type, while the remaining 10% fall into the can't-put-it-back type. I have yet to find someone who is purely the can't-throw-it-away type, probably because anyone who can't throw things away will soon end up with so much stuff that their storage space overflows. As for the 10% who can discard but can't put things away, when we start tidying seriously, it is soon obvious that they could discard much more because they produce at least 30 bags of garbage. My point is that tidying must begin with discarding, regardless of personality type. As long as my clients grasp this principle, there is no need for me to change the content of what I teach to suit the person. I teach the same approach to everyone. How I convey it and the way each client puts it into practice will naturally differ because each individual is just as unique as the way he or she furnishes the house. But I don't need to worry about identifying these differences or creating complex categories. Effective tidying involves only two essential actions: discarding and deciding where to store things. Of the two, discarding must come first. This principle does not change. The rest depends on the level of tidiness you personally want to achieve. Make tidying a special event, not a daily chore. I begin my course with these words: tidying is a special event. Don't do it every day. This usually elicits a moment of stunned silence. Of course, there are countless perspectives on tidying, and even though I have undertaken an exhaustive study of the subject, I don't claim to know every method that exists. Therefore, what I say here applies only to my own method. Still, let me repeat, tidying should be done just once. Or, to put it more accurately, the work of tidying should be completed once and for all within a single period of time. If you think tidying is an endless chore that must be done every day, you are gravely mistaken. There are two types of tidying: daily tidying and special event tidying. Daily tidying, which consists of using something and putting it back in its place, will always be a part of our lives as long as we need to use clothes, books, writing materials, and so on. But the purpose of this book is to inspire you to tackle the special event of putting your house in order as soon as possible. By successfully concluding this once-in-a-lifetime task, you will gain the lifestyle you aspire to and enjoy a clean and orderly space of your choosing. Can you place your hand on your heart and swear that you are happy when surrounded by so much stuff that you don't even remember what's there? Most people desperately need to put their house in order. Unfortunately, The majority of them fail to embrace this as a special event, and instead make do with rooms that are more like storage sheds. Decades drag by as they struggle unsuccessfully to maintain order by tidying every day. Believe me, until you have completed the once-in-a-lifetime event of putting your house in order, any attempt to tidy on a daily basis is doomed to failure. Conversely, once you have put your house in order, tidying will be reduced to the very simple task of putting things back where they belong. In fact, this becomes an unconscious habit. I use the term special event because it is crucial to tackle this job within a short space of time while your spirits are uplifted. After all, it isn't desirable to stay in a state of excitement forever. You may worry that even when this event is over, your space will sink back into disorder. Perhaps you shop a lot and imagine that your possessions will just pile up again. I realize that it's hard to believe if you have never tried it, but once you have completed this dramatic cleanup, you will have no difficulty whatsoever in putting things back where they belong, or in deciding where to keep new things. Unbelievable as it may sound, you only have to experience a state of perfect order once to be able to maintain it. All you need to do is take the time to sit down and examine each item you own. Decide whether you want to keep or discard it, and then choose where to put what you keep. Have you ever told yourself, "I'm just no good at tidying," or "It's not worth trying, I was born untidy"? Many people carry this type of negative self-image for years, but it is swept away the instant they experience their own perfectly clean space. This drastic change in self-perception, the belief that you can do anything if you set your mind to it, transforms behavior and lifestyles. This is precisely why my students never experience rebound. Once you have experienced the powerful impact of a perfectly ordered space, you too will never return to clutter. Yes, I mean you. It may sound too difficult, but I can honestly say that it's quite simple. When you tidy, you are dealing with objects. Objects are easy to discard and move around. Anyone can do it. Your goal is clearly in sight. The moment you have put everything in its place, you have crossed the finish line. Unlike work, studies, or sports, there is no need to compare your performance to that of anyone else. You are the standard. Better yet, the one thing that everyone finds hardest to do, continuing, is totally unnecessary. You only have to decide where to put things once. I never tidy my room. Why? Because it is already tidy. The only tidying I do is once or sometimes twice a year, and for a total of about 1 hour each time. The many days I spent tidying without seeing permanent results now seem hard to believe. In contrast, I feel happy and content. I have time to experience bliss in my quiet space, where even the air feels fresh and clean. Time to sit and sip herbal tea while I reflect on my day. As I look around, my glance falls on a painting that I particularly love, purchased overseas, and a vase of fresh flowers in one corner. Although not large, the space I live in is graced only with those things that speak to my heart. My lifestyle brings me joy. Wouldn't you like to live this way too? It's easy, once you know how to truly put your home in order. 2. Finish discarding first. Start by discarding, all at once, intensely and completely. You think you have tidied everything perfectly, but within a few days you notice that your room is becoming cluttered again. As time goes by, you collect more things, and before you know it, your space has reverted to its previous state. This rebound effect is caused by ineffective methods that tackle tidying only halfway. As I've already mentioned, there is just one way to escape this negative spiral: by tidying efficiently, all at once, as quickly as possible, to make the perfect clutter-free environment. But how does this create the right mindset? When you tidy your space completely, you transform the scenery. The change is so profound that you feel as if you are living in a totally different world. This deeply affects your mind and inspires a strong aversion to reverting to your previously cluttered state. The key is to make the change so sudden that you experience a complete change of heart. The same impact can never be achieved if the process is gradual. To achieve a sudden change like this, you need to use the most efficient method of tidying. Otherwise, before you know it, the day will be gone and you will have made no headway. The more time it takes, the more tired you feel, and the more likely you are to give up when you're only halfway through. When things pile up again, you will be caught in a downward spiral. From my experience with private individual lessons, quickly means about half a year. That may seem like a long time, but it is only 6 months out of your entire life. Once the process is complete and you've experienced what it's like to be perfectly tidy, you will have been freed forever from the mistaken assumption that you're no good at tidying. For the best results, I ask that you adhere faithfully to the following rule: tidy in the right order. As we've seen, there are only two tasks involved: discarding and deciding where to keep things. Just two, but discarding must come first. Be sure to completely finish the first task before starting the next. Do not even think of putting your things away until you have finished the process of discarding. Failure to follow this order is one reason many people never make permanent progress. In the middle of discarding, they start thinking about where to put things. As soon as they think, "I wonder if it will fit in this drawer," the work of discarding comes to a halt. You can think about where to put things when you've finished getting rid of everything you don't need. To summarize, the secret of success is to tidy in one shot, as quickly and completely as possible, and to start by discarding. Before you start, visualize your destination. By now you understand why it is crucial to discard before thinking about where to keep things. But to start discarding without thinking ahead at all would be like casting yourself into the negative spiral of clutter. Instead, begin by identifying your goal. There must have been some reason you picked up this book. What was it that motivated you to tidy in the first place? What do you hope to gain through tidying? Before you start getting rid of things, take the time to think this through carefully. This means visualizing the ideal lifestyle you dream of. If you skip this step, not only will it delay the whole process, but it will also put you at higher risk for rebound. Goals like, "I want to live clutter-free," or "I want to be able to put things away," are too broad. You need to think much more deeply than that. Think in concrete terms so that you can vividly picture what it would be like to live in a clutter-free space. One client in her 20s defined her dream as a more feminine lifestyle. She lived in a messy 7-mat room. 7 tatami mats take up about 10 by 13 feet of floor space, with a built-in closet and 3 sets of shelves of different sizes. This should have been sufficient storage space, but no matter which way I turned, all I could see was clutter. The closet was so stuffed the doors wouldn't shut, and clothes oozed from the set of drawers inside like the stuffing in a hamburger. The curtain rail over the bay window was hung with so many clothes that there was no need for a curtain. The floor and bed were covered in baskets and bags filled with magazines and papers. When my client came home from work, she moved the things on her bed to the floor, and when she woke up, she put them back on the bed to make a path to the door so she could go to work. Her lifestyle could not have been called feminine by any stretch of the imagination. "What do you mean by a feminine lifestyle?" I asked. She thought for a long moment before finally responding. "Well, when I come home from work, the floor would be clear of clutter, and my room, as tidy as a hotel suite with nothing obstructing the line of sight. I'd have a pink bedspread and a white antique-style lamp. Before going to bed, I would have a bath, burn aromatherapy oils, and listen to classical piano or violin while doing yoga and drinking herbal tea. I would fall asleep with a feeling of unhurried spaciousness." Her description was as vivid as if she actually lived that way. It's important to achieve this degree of concreteness when visualizing your ideal lifestyle. If you find that hard, if you can't picture the kind of life you would like to have, try looking in interior decorating magazines for photos that grab you. Visiting model homes can also be useful. Seeing a variety of homes will help you get a feel for what you like. By the way, the client I just described does indeed enjoy post-bath aromatherapy, classical music, and yoga. Redeemed from the depths of disorder, she emerged to grasp the feminine lifestyle to which she aspired. Now that you can picture the lifestyle you dream of, is it time to move on to discarding? No, not yet. I can understand your impatience, but to prevent rebound, you need to move ahead properly, step by step, as you launch into this once-in-a-lifetime event. Your next step is to identify why you want to live like that. Look back over your notes about the kind of lifestyle you want, and think again. Why do you want to do aromatherapy before bed? Why do you want to listen to classical music while doing yoga? If the answers are, because I want to relax before bed, and I want to do yoga to lose weight, ask yourself why you want to relax and why you want to lose weight. Maybe your answers will be, I don't want to be tired when I go to work the next day, and I want to lose weight so that I can be more svelte. Ask yourself why again, for each answer. Repeat this process 3 to 5 times for every item. As you continue to explore the reasons behind your ideal lifestyle, you will come to a simple realization. The whole point in both discarding and keeping things is to be happy. It may seem obvious, but it is important to experience this realization for yourself and let it sink into your heart. Before you start tidying, look at the lifestyle you aspire to and ask yourself, why do I want to tidy? When you find the answer, you are ready to move on to the next step, examining what you own. Selection criterion. Does it spark joy? What standard do you use to decide what to get rid of? There are several common patterns when it comes to discarding. One is to discard things when they cease being functional. For example, when something breaks down beyond repair or when part of a set is broken. Another is to discard things that are out of date, such as clothes that are no longer in fashion, or things related to an event that has passed. It's easy to get rid of things when there is an obvious reason for doing so. It's much more difficult when there is no compelling reason. Various experts have proposed yardsticks for discarding things people find hard to part with. These include such rules as, discard anything you haven't used for a year, and, if you can't decide, pack those items away in a box and look at them again 6 months later. However, the moment you start focusing on how to choose what to throw away, you have actually veered significantly off course. In this state, it is extremely risky to continue tidying. At one point in my life, I was virtually a disposal unit. After discovering the art of discarding when I was 15, I focused on how to get rid of things, and my research efforts escalated. I was always looking for new places to practice, be it my siblings' rooms or the communal storage lockers at school. My head was full of tidying tips, and I had complete, albeit misguided, confidence that I could tidy any place. My particular goal at that time was to get rid of as much as possible. I applied every criteria suggested by the various books I read on reducing. I tried getting rid of clothes that I hadn't worn for 2 years, discarding another item every time I bought something new, and throwing away anything I wasn't sure of. I threw out 30 bags of garbage in 1 month. But no matter how much I discarded, not a single room in my house felt any tidier. In fact, I found myself going shopping just to relieve the stress, and so failed miserably to reduce the total volume of my possessions. At home, I was always uptight, constantly on the lookout for superfluous things that could be discarded. When I found something not in use, I would pounce on it vengefully and throw it in the garbage. Not surprisingly, I became increasingly irritable and tense and found it impossible to relax even in my own home. One day after school, I opened the door to my room to begin cleaning as usual. At the sight of that untidy space, I finally lost it. I don't want to tidy anymore, I cried. Plopping myself down in the middle of my room, I began to think. I had spent 3 years tidying and discarding things, yet my room still felt cluttered. Would someone please tell me why my room isn't tidy when I work so hard at it? Although I did not say this out loud, in my heart I was practically shouting. At that moment, I heard a voice. look more closely at what is there.
What do you mean? I look at what's here so closely every day I could drill a hole through it all.
With that thought still in my head, I fell fast asleep right there on the floor. If I had been a little smarter, I would have realized before I became so neurotic that focusing solely on throwing things away can only bring unhappiness. Why? Because we should be choosing what we want to keep, not what we want to get rid of. When I woke up, I knew immediately what that voice in my head had meant. Look more closely at what is there. I had been so focused on what to discard, on attacking the unwanted obstacles around me, that I had forgotten to cherish the things that I loved, the things I wanted to keep. Through this experience, I came to the conclusion that the best way to choose what to keep and what to throw away is to take each item in one's hand and ask, "Does this spark joy?" If it does, keep it. If not, dispose of it. This is not only the simplest, but also the most accurate yardstick by which to judge. You may wonder about the effectiveness of such a vague criteria, but the trick is to handle each item. Don't just open up your closet and decide after a cursory glance that everything in it gives you a thrill. You must take each outfit in your hand. When you touch a piece of clothing, your body reacts. Its response to each item is different. Trust me and try it. I chose this standard for a reason. After all, what is the point in tidying? If it's not so that our space and the things in it can bring us happiness, then I think there is no point at all. Therefore, the best criterion for choosing what to keep and what to discard is whether keeping it will make you happy, whether it will bring you joy. Are you happy wearing clothes that don't give you pleasure? Do you feel joy when surrounded by piles of unread books that don't touch your heart? Do you think that owning accessories you know you'll never use will ever bring you happiness? The answer to these questions should be no. Now imagine yourself living in a space that contains only things that spark joy. Isn't this the lifestyle you dream of? Keep only those things that speak to your heart. Then take the plunge and discard all the rest. By doing this, you can reset your life and embark on a new lifestyle. One category at a time. Deciding what to keep on the basis of what sparks joy in your heart is the most important step in tidying. But what concrete steps are needed to efficiently eliminate excess? Let me begin by telling you what not to do. Don't start selecting and discarding by location. Don't think, "I'll tidy the bedroom first and then move on to the living room," or "I'll go through my drawers one by one, starting from the top down." This approach is fatal. Why? Because most people don't bother to store similar items in the same place. In the majority of households, items that fall into the same category are stored in two or more places scattered around the house. Say, for example, you start with the bedroom closet. After you have finished sorting and discarding everything in it, you are bound to come across clothes you kept in a different closet or a coat draped over a living room chair. You will then have to repeat the whole process of choosing and storing, wasting time and effort, and you cannot make an accurate assessment of what you want to keep and discard under such conditions. Repetition and wasted effort can kill motivation, and therefore it must be avoided. For this reason, I recommend that you always think in terms of category, not place. Before choosing what to keep, collect everything that falls within the same category at one time. Take every last item out and lay everything in one spot. To demonstrate the steps involved, let's go back to the previous example of clothing. You start by deciding that you are going to organize and put away your clothes. The next step is to search every room of the house. Bring every piece of clothing you find to the same place and spread them out on the floor. Then pick up each outfit and see if it sparks joy. Those, and only those, are the ones to keep. Follow this procedure for every category. If you have too many clothes, then you can make subcategories, such as tops, bottoms, socks, and so on, and examine your clothes, one subcategory at a time. Gathering every item in one place is essential to this process because it gives you an accurate grasp of how much you have. Most people are shocked at the sheer volume, which is often at least twice what they imagined. By collecting things in one spot, you can also compare items that are similar in design, making it easier to decide whether you want to keep them. I have another good reason for removing all items in the same category from drawers, closets, and cupboards and spreading them out on the floor. Things stored out of sight are dormant. This makes it much harder to decide whether they inspire joy or not. By exposing them to the light of day and jolting them alive, so to speak, you'll find it surprisingly easy to judge whether they touch your heart. Dealing with just one category within a single time frame speeds up the tidying process. So be sure to gather every item in the category you are working on. Don't let any slip by unnoticed. Starting with mementos spells certain failure. You launch into your day all fired up to tidy. But before you know it, the sun is setting and you've barely made a dent in your belongings. Noticing the time with a start, you feel yourself sinking into self-reproach and despair. And what are you holding in your hands? More often than not, it's one of your favorite comic books, an album, or some other item that brings back fond memories. My advice to begin tidying not by room but by category does not mean that you should start with any category you like. The degree of difficulty involved in selecting what to keep and what to discard differs greatly depending on the category. People who get stuck halfway usually do so because they start with the things that are hardest to make decisions about. Things that bring back memories, such as photos, are not the place for beginners to start. Not only is the sheer volume of items in this category usually greater than that of any other, but it is also far harder to make a decision about whether or not to keep them. In addition to the physical value of things, there are three other factors that add value to our belongings: function, information, and emotional attachment. When the element of rarity is added, the difficulty in choosing what to discard multiplies. People have trouble discarding things that they could still use, functional value, that contain helpful information, informational value, and that have sentimental ties, emotional value. When these things are hard to obtain or replace, rarity, they become even harder to part with. The process of deciding what to keep and what to discard will go much more smoothly if you begin with items that are easier to make decisions about. As you gradually work toward the harder categories, you will be honing your decision-making skills. Clothes are the easiest because their rarity value is extremely low. Photographs and letters, on the other hand, not only have a high sentimental value but are also one of a kind. Therefore, they should be left until last. This is true for photographs in particular, because they tend to turn up at random while sorting through other categories and in the most unexpected places, such as between books and papers. The best sequence is this: clothes first, then books, papers, kimono, miscellany, and lastly, mementos. This order has also proven to be the most efficient in terms of the level of difficulty for the subsequent task of storing. Finally, sticking to this sequence sharpens our intuitive sense of what items spark joy inside us. If you can dramatically accelerate the speed of the decision-making process just by changing the order in which you discard, don't you think it's worth a try? Don't let your family see. Marathon tidying produces a heap of garbage. At this stage, the one disaster that can wreak more havoc than an earthquake is the entrance of that recycling expert who goes by the alias of Mother. One of my clients, whom I'll call M, lived with her parents and one sibling. They had moved to the house 15 years earlier when M was still in grade school. Not only did she love buying clothes, but she also saved those that had sentimental value, such as school uniforms and t-shirts made for various events. She stored these in boxes and stacked them on the floor until the floorboards were completely obscured from view. It took 5 hours to sort and clean. By the end of that day, she had 15 bags to get rid of, including 8 bags of clothes, 200 books, various stuffed toys, and crafts she had made at school. We had stacked everything neatly beside the door on the floor, which was now finally visible, and I was just about to explain a very important point. "There's one secret you should know about getting rid of this garbage," I began, when the door opened and in came her mother bearing a tray of iced tea. Oh dear, I thought.
Her mother set down the tray on a table. "Thank you so much for helping my daughter," she said, and turned to leave. At that moment, her eyes fell on the pile of garbage by the door. "Oh my, are you going to throw that away?" she said, pointing to a pink yoga mat on top of the pile. "I haven't used it in 2 years."
"Really? Well, maybe I'll use it then."
She began rummaging through the bags.
"Oh, and maybe this too."
When she left, she took not only the yoga mat, but also 3 skirts, 2 blouses, 2 jackets, and some stationery. When the room was quiet again, I sipped my iced tea and asked Em, "So how often does your mother do yoga?"
"I've never seen her do any."
What I had been about to say before her mother came in was this:
"Don't let your family see what's here. If at all possible, take the bags out yourself."
There's no need to let your family know the details of what you throw out or donate. I especially recommend that my clients avoid showing their parents. It's not that there is anything to be ashamed of. There's nothing wrong with tidying. However, it's extremely stressful for parents to see what their children discard. The sheer volume of the pile can make parents anxious about whether their children can survive on what's left. In addition, despite knowing that they should rejoice at their child's independence and maturity, parents can find it very painful to see clothes, toys, and mementos from the past on the rubbish heap, especially if they are things they gave to their child. Keeping your garbage out of sight is considerate. It also protects your family from acquiring more than they need or can enjoy. Up to this point, your family was perfectly content with what they had. When they see what you have chosen to discard, they may feel guilty at such blatant waste, but the items they retrieve from your pile just increase the burden of unnecessary items in their home. And we should be ashamed of forcing them to carry this burden. In an overwhelming percentage of cases, it is the mother who retrieves things from her daughter. Yet mothers rarely wear the clothes they take. The women I work with, who are in their 50s and 60s, invariably end up discarding or donating their daughter's hand-me-downs without ever wearing them. I think we should avoid creating situations like this where a mother's affection for her daughter becomes a burden. Of course, there's nothing wrong with other family members actually using the things you don't need. If you live with your family, you could ask them, "Is there something you need that you were planning to buy?" before you start tidying. And then if you happen to come across exactly what they need, give it to them as a gift. If you're mad at your family, your room may be the cause.
"Even if I tidy, the rest of my family just messes things up again."
"My husband's a pack rat. How can I get him to throw things away?"
It can be very annoying when your family doesn't cooperate with your attempts to achieve the ideal home. This is something I experienced many times in the past. At one time, I was so absorbed in tidying that cleaning my own room was not enough. I just had to tackle my siblings' rooms and every other space in the house, and I was constantly frustrated by my untidy family. A major cause of distress was the communal storage closet in the middle of the house. To me, more than half of it seemed to be devoted to unused and unnecessary junk. The clothing rods were jammed with outfits I had never seen my mother wear, and suits belonging to my father that were clearly obsolete. Boxes of manga belonging to my brother covered the floor. I would wait until the timing was right and confront the owner with this question: "You don't use this anymore, right?" But the response was either, "Yes, I do," or, "I'll get rid of it myself," which they never did. Every time I looked in that closet, I would sigh and complain. "Why does everyone keep accumulating things? Can't they see how hard I'm working to keep the house tidy?" Fully aware that I was an anomaly when it came to tidying, I was not going to let them defeat me. When my frustration reached the limit, I decided to adopt stealth tactics. I identified items that had not been used for many years, judging by their design, the amount of dust they had gathered, and the way they smelled. I would move those items to the very back of the closet and observe what happened. If no one noticed that they were missing, I disposed of them, one item at a time, just as if I were thinning plants. After 3 months of this strategy, I had managed to dispose of 10 bags worth. In most cases, no one noticed, and life went on as usual. But when the volume reached a certain point, people began to miss a thing or two.
When they pointed the finger at me, I responded quite shamelessly. My basic strategy was to play ignorant. Hey, do you know where my jacket went?
Nope.
If they pressed me further, my next step was denial. Muddy, are you sure you didn't throw it out?
Yes, I'm sure.
Oh, well, I wonder where it could be then. If they gave up at this point, my conclusion was that whatever the item had been, it hadn't been worth saving. But if they were no longer fooled, I still wasn't fazed. I know it was here, Muddy. I saw it with my own eyes just 2 months ago. Far from apologizing for discarding their things without permission, I would retort, I threw it out for you because you weren't capable of doing it yourself. In retrospect, I must admit that I was pretty arrogant. Once exposed, I was met with a flood of reproach and protest, and, in the end, I was forbidden to tidy anywhere but my own room. If I could, I'd go back and give myself a good smack and make sure that I didn't even consider such a ridiculous campaign. Getting rid of other people's things without permission demonstrates a sad lack of common sense. Although such stealth tactics generally succeed and the items discarded are never missed, the risk of losing your family's trust when you are caught is far too great. Besides, it just isn't right. If you really want your family to tidy up, there is a much easier way to go about it. After I was banned from tidying other people's spaces and had nowhere to turn but my own room, I took a good look around it and was struck by a surprising fact. There were far more items that needed discarding than I had noticed before. A shirt in my closet that I had never worn, along with an outdated skirt that I wouldn't wear again. Books on my shelves that I knew I didn't need. I realized with a shock that I was guilty of exactly the same thing I had been so bitterly accusing my family of doing. Not being in a position to criticize others, I sat down with my garbage bags and focused on tidying my own space. After about 2 weeks, a change began to occur in my family. My brother, who had refused, no matter how much I had complained, to get rid of anything, began a thorough sorting of his belongings. In a single day, he disposed of more than 200 books. Then my parents and my sister gradually began to sort and discard their clothes and accessories. In the end, my whole family was able to keep the house much tidier than before. To quietly work away at disposing of your own excess is actually the best way of dealing with a family that doesn't tidy. As if drawn into your wake, they will begin weeding out unnecessary belongings and tidying without your having to utter a single complaint. It may sound incredible, but when someone starts tidying, it sets off a chain reaction. Cleaning quietly on one's own generates another interesting change. The ability to tolerate a certain level of untidiness among your family members. Once I was satisfied with my own room, I no longer felt the urge to dispose of things belonging to my siblings or parents. When I noticed that communal spaces such as the living room or bathroom were messy, I cleaned them up without a second thought and never bothered to mention it. I have noticed this same change occur in many of my clients as well. If you feel annoyed with your family for being untidy, I urge you to check your own space, especially your storage. You are bound to find things that need to be thrown away. The urge to point out someone else's failure to tidy is usually a sign that you are neglecting to take care of your own space. This is why you should begin by discarding only your own things. You can leave the communal spaces to the end. The first step is to confront your own stuff. What you don't need, your family doesn't either. My sister is 3 years younger than me. Quiet and a bit on the shy side, she prefers to stay inside and draw or read quietly rather than to go out and socialize. Without a doubt, she suffered the most from my research on tidying, serving as my unsuspecting victim. By the time I was a university student, my focus was on discarding, but there were always things that I found hard to dispose of, such as a t-shirt that I really liked but that somehow didn't look right. Unable to bring myself to part with it, I would try the item on repeatedly, standing in front of the mirror, but in the end, would be forced to conclude that it just didn't suit me. If it was brand new, or a gift from my parents, the thought of getting rid of it made me feel very guilty. At times like this, my sister came in very handy. The gift-for-my-sister method seemed the perfect way to cast off such items. When I say gift, I don't mean that I wrapped it up like a present. Far from it. With the unwanted outfit in my hand, I would barge into my sister's room where she lay on her bed reading contentedly. Extracting the book from her hand, I would say, "You want this t-shirt? I'll give it to you if you like." Seeing the puzzled look on her face, I would deal the final blow. "It's brand new and really cute, but if you don't need it, I'll have to throw it away. Are you okay with that?" My poor, mild-mannered sister would have no choice but to say, "I guess I'll take it then." This happened so frequently that my sister, who hardly ever shopped, had a closet jammed to overflowing. Although she did wear some of the clothes I gave her, there were many more that she wore only once, if ever. Yet I continued to give her presents. After all, they were good clothes, and I thought she should be happy to have more. I only realized how wrong I was after I began my consulting business and met a client whom I will call Kay. Kay was in her 20s, worked for a cosmetics company, and lived at home. As we were sorting through her clothes, I began to notice something odd about the choices she was making. Despite the fact that she owned enough clothes to fill one large closet, which is an average-size wardrobe, the number of clothes she chose to keep seemed unnaturally small. Her answer to the question, "Does this spark joy?" was almost always no. After thanking each item for a job well done, I would pass them to her to discard. I couldn't help noticing the look of relief on her face every time she put an outfit in the bag. Examining the collection more closely, I saw that the clothes she chose to keep were mostly casual things like t-shirts, while the ones she discarded were a completely different style, tight skirts and revealing tops. When I asked her about this, she said, "My older sister gave me those." When all the clothes were sorted and she had made her final choice, she murmured, "Look at that. I was surrounded by all this stuff that I didn't even like." Her sister's hand-me-downs had comprised over a third of her wardrobe, but hardly any of these had given her that important thrill of pleasure. Although she had worn them because her sister had given them to her, she had never liked them. To me, this seems tragic, and this is not an isolated case. In my work, the volume discarded by younger sisters is always greater than the volume discarded by older sisters, a phenomenon surely related to the fact that younger children are often accustomed to wearing hand-me-downs. There are two reasons why younger sisters tend to collect clothes they don't really like. One is that it's hard to get rid of something received from family. The other is that they don't really know what they like, which makes it hard to decide whether they should part with it. Because they receive so much clothing from others, they don't really need to shop, and therefore they have less opportunity to develop the instinct for what really inspires joy. Don't misunderstand me. Giving things you can't use to others who can is an excellent idea. Not only is it economical, but it can also be a source of great joy to see these things being enjoyed and treasured by someone close to you. But that is not the same as forcing things onto your family members because you can't bring yourself to discard or donate them. Whether the victim is a sibling, a parent, or a child, this particular custom should be banned. Although my sister never complained, I am sure that she must have had mixed feelings when she accepted my hand-me-downs. Basically, I was simply transferring my guilt at not being able to discard them onto her. In retrospect, that was pretty despicable. If you want to give something away, don't push people to take it unconditionally or pressure them by making them feel guilty. Find out in advance what they like, and if you find something that fits those criteria, then and only then should you show it to them. You can also offer to give it to them on the condition that it is something they would have been willing to pay for. We need to show consideration for others by helping them avoid the burden of owning more than they need or can enjoy. Tidying is a dialogue with oneself.
"Kunmari, would you like to come stand under a waterfall?"
I got this invitation from a client, a charming woman who was still an active business manager and an avid skier and hiker at the age of 74.